Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
Bandwidth for TWIT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Rick Calvert.
Good morning, everybody. Who's still sleepy? I am. One more day. Unless you're staying for the Web TV Awards, then two more days. One more late night. Anybody come to the Podcast Awards last night? Did David H. Lawrence the 17th do an amazing job or what? I mean, last minute, that was fantastic. The photos you're seeing here, are you seeing them? No, there you go. Are taken on the photo walk the day before the show opens. So there's so much stuff going on the show at the show. Aaron Hockley and Denise led this photo walk, and I think there was about 30 people who went on this. So next year, if you want to come early and go on the photo walk, be sure to sign up for that early. I also want to try to thank a couple other people. I'm trying to thank as many people as I can. If for some reason I leave you off, I apologize. It's not because we don't appreciate what you do. One person I see, Dave Hamilton. Thanks for coming out this year, Dave. I really appreciate it. Dave's been around since the very first Podcast Expo. And Todd Cochran, again, thank you for keeping the Podcast Awards alive. It's amazing. Cynthia Sanchez from OS Pinteresting, thank you so much for in the front row. Thank you. Lisa Kinsell, actually, who we've got Leo coming out in a little bit, but Lisa is the woman behind the scenes who kind of makes everything happen. Thank you to her. And thanks again to all of our speakers. Again, amazing job, you guys. Thank you so much for all the hard work that you put into this and the content you give for our attendees. Thank you. We love you. Thank you so much for coming out. For so many of you braving the blizzards, thank you once again. Give yourselves a really warm round of applause, all right? All right. Again, thanks to our sponsors, Marshall Silver. There is a blog post coming, I promise. Okay? I promise. Dragon Search, again, Rick, I'm so sorry, man, you couldn't make it. I know you tried everything to get here. Please go by their booth. And who's here from Dragon Search? There's one person who made it all by herself. What's that? Okay. Anyway, please go by their booth. .me, thanks, you guys. Academy of Web Television, you guys are all welcome to come to the Web Television Awards tomorrow night. We're going to send you an email tonight. There's a code, NMX14. It'll be free for you guys to come to the Web TV Awards tomorrow night if you want. That's a red carpet event. It's the Oscars for the internet. Cliff Ravenscraft, Podcast One, Podcasting A to Z, thank you. Norm Pattis, who's coming out in a minute here from Podcast One, thank you so much. U.S. Army, again, thank you guys for being a sponsor, and thank all of you, active duty, retired for your service, thank you so much. And WordPress, thank you. Yep. WordPress, thank you guys. Somebody, I've heard it several times, said about 90% of the bloggers here use WordPress. So thanks you guys for being here. Justin TV, thank you for hosting the stream. New Tech, thank you for providing the gear. And Tech Zulu, Efren, thank you to you and your team for making the stream work most of the time. We really appreciate it. So. The video we just showed is from our TBEX event. I've told you guys travel bloggers are spoiled. That's from the party at the Guinness factory in Dublin in October. They gave us the whole building. It's a six-story building in the shape of a Guinness glass. And the top of the building is like where the foam of the beer would be. It's a 360-degree bar view of the city and the surrounding area. It's one of the tallest buildings in the city. It's amazing. And they gave this all to the travel bloggers for free. So I want to be – and they had that band there playing the song in Gaelic, and it was unreal. I want to be a travel blogger. Anyway, all of that said, We've got, I think, a great, great opening keynote this morning. Norm Pattiz from Podcast One. As I mentioned last night, the Podcast Awards, he also started a little company called Westwood One, really the pioneer of syndicated radio. And the fact that Norm is now in the podcasting business, I think, is really interesting for all of us here in the room. I can't wait to hear what he has to say. Noah Shanick from Stitcher Radio, also doing some pretty amazing things. And he just told me backstage they have some other major announcements coming this week. So what Stitcher Radio is doing with podcasting, I think, is really important to us. And, of course, Leo Laporte, I call him the Pied Piper of podcasting. Cliff, I know the fanboy, is in the front row again waiting. Leo hosted the Podcast Awards for us last year. It was so much fun. He wanted to be here last night, but they just had other stuff going on, a conflict. And he's actually really sick. And he still came because he loves the community so much, he wanted to be here. So please welcome Norm Pattiz from Podcast One, Noah Shanick from Stitcher Radio, and our moderator, Leo Laporte from Twit. Thank you, Norm. Thank you, Noah.
Thanks, Rick. Hey, everybody. Can you hear me? Oh, yeah, there we go.
There's a lot of people up there.
Well, it's good to see y'all. So this panel, I don't know what this panel is going to be about, but it's kind of a great chance to hear from two really important people in new media. Noah Shanick founded Stitcher as a way to... What was your plan with Stitcher?
A way to make podcasts easier to listen to.
Particularly in the car.
Particularly in the car.
Yeah, and you've done that. You brought it to Ford. Who else?
Ford, GM, BMW, some Mercedes cars, and we've got a couple more big announcements this...
that's exciting.
At CES.
Yeah, that's great. And I think if you're a podcaster, you're on Stitcher. I mean, that's, you know, it's a must. Norm Pattiz is a legend in the radio industry. He founded the number one syndication company, Westwood One, how many years ago? 30 years ago?
1977.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
And I tried to work for him for years, and he never gave me the time of day. But
it never got to my desk, and that was when I was a one-man show.
But he's also in the Radio Hall of Fame. I mean, what's really interesting to me is that a guy with a background in radio would be interested in podcasting at all.
Well, what's interesting to me is that a guy in radio wouldn't be interested in podcasting,
right,
since I think it's the future of audio.
Right, right. I think a lot of radio, we're going to have iHeartRadio here on the stage, but instead we'll just bash them.
It'll be easy.
That is Clear Channel's attempt to basically do a Stitcher, to get their radio content in your car via 3G and 4G and to listen on the web and, you know, kind of aggregate all their streaming stuff. Should radio be afraid of what's happening in podcasting right now?
Well, no. I mean, I think that radio should be afraid of staying the course. You know, radio listening is not growing anymore. I mean, the beautiful thing about radio when I got into it was that it was a continuous growth pattern. Every year, there were more and more and more and more people listening to radio. Well, that's not the case anymore. There are many more options. And, you know, I really can't understand why the traditional radio business hasn't embraced podcasting or on-demand radio. I mean, it's just, if you look at what's going on in the television business, I mean, on-demand is changing the nature of TV watching. You know, even the awards for great programs are being heavily influenced by on-demand and by cable and so forth. And I don't see why the same thing isn't going to happen to audio. You need to be able to provide the programming and the content that listeners, i.e. consumers, want to consume when they want to consume it.
I still do a radio show. I work for Clear Channel. I still, and I love radio. I mean, that's how I got in the business out of college, was radio, and I
so
love
do I.
it. Yeah. I think probably radio hates Noah because you are the most direct threat right now to radio. I mean, music, I think music radio's given up, right? Everybody had an iPod or some other form of music that could program their own music, then there's Pandora. But talk radio is the last kind of bastion in the car, and you're really threatening that directly.
I don't know. To the extent that radio is a content creator, and they're
the best audio content creator. They've
right.
been around
They're
for
the
a
pros.
Long time.
Yeah.
We're a great partner to them
right.
because we're allowing them to easily, without reinventing the wheel, get the content that they're already producing to listeners when the listeners want to hear it. So we've got great partnerships in the industry with radio, but certainly the moving from AM, FM to the internet in general is daunting for them.
Well, it's threatening because they have a business model based on, it's the equivalent of a brick and mortar store, right? A radio station is like a bookstore, and the idea of doing online is threatening to their main business model, isn't it?
Can I respectfully disagree? You know, look, I happen to think that, you know, that Stitcher is doing wonderful and terrific things. But just like I think the iHeart radio model is a failed model, I don't think that radio is where you go to find the best audio programming and the most creative audio programming. That may have been the case many years ago when no single owner of radio stations can own more than five AMs right. or five FMs.
Now it's just a handful of companies.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the five AMs and five FMs. That was in the country, not just in a market.
Right.
Now you've got, you know, two major radio players, you know, who own most of the major market radio stations in the country. And if you don't have some kind of an arrangement with them, you're not going to get your independently produced radio program on their stations.
Right.
So you can't build a big enough audience to sell to a national advertiser to support what they're doing. So, I mean, you know, when you take a look, I mean, if you go to iTunes with 250,000 or you go to Podcast One with 200, you'll find a much greater variety of programming than you could ever find on local radio stations, and certainly as a national source of supply. Some of our most successful programs could never find a home in broadcast radio. I mean, you know, we launched, you know, Steve Austin, you know, and we launched Bret Easton Ellis. Those guys aren't going to get on radio stations, you know, they've got a huge amount of downloads because they've got an audience that follows them, and they've got a fan base, and social media can let their fan base know what they're doing, and then by bringing on guests who have their own social media and promoting throughout a network of other programs, you can build a self-perpetuating promotional machine. Radio can't do that. And I'm still in the radio business. But interestingly enough, you know, one of my shows, Loveline, has three times the audience on demand that it does for
Is that
its live
true?
Radio show. Yeah,
wow.
sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
But Loveline started on radio, so I don't think Noah's completely wrong.
It's
I
mean, still on radio.
And yeah, and some of the most popular content on Stitcher is traditional terrestrial radio content.
Sure.
From the NPRs of the world to the Rush Limbaughs of the world. And now people can consume it when they want to consume it. So it's a better mousetrap.
That's the good fit. That's why radio should embrace what we're doing. But in embracing the successful things that are on radio to expand its audience, there's still a tremendous opportunity to create new programming that will develop its own audience that wouldn't be given a chance to start on radio.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be given a chance.
That's
and
right.
if they turn out to be really successful, it's going to be because of on-demand, and
right.
radio will become secondary.
I don't know if radio becomes secondary. It's just it's a growth of the total overall.
Oh, what do you know?
I don't. In fact, I often despair about radio. But I think it's very common for people to be very black and white and say, well, as soon as, you know, the next thing comes, the old thing's going to die. And
not
I don't think it's going to be that way.
No,
I think,
not at all.
Now, if you were Howard Stern, what would you do today? He's a good example. A guy who's got a great personal brand. It's a radio brand. He went to satellite. Because, you know, they offered him $500 million.
Right.
I don't know how well that's working for him right now. A lot of people said, Howard, you should do podcasts. What would you do today if you were Howard Stern?
If I was Howard Stern, I would go to a subscription model podcast or, you know, video as well, audio, video. I would go to a subscription model and make people pay for the content. He's one of the few people who can get away with having his content paid for.
Not everybody can do that.
No. Very few people can do that. There's only one. I'm thinking of Glenn Beck. When Glenn Beck...
He's done well, hasn't he?
He's got... that program probably is generating in paid subscription revenue $40, $50 million.
Jeez.
But you can do that with...
A year?
A year, yeah, sure.
Wow.
Sure. But
that took a mainstream media starting point before he could get to that point, right?
Sure, and he gave up. He was reaching millions and millions
right.
of listeners and viewers, and now he's got hundreds of thousands.
Right.
But those are, you know, he's like an evangelist, you know. If you can find somebody who has an evangelistic following, and, you know, which is maybe evangelists, and we're looking at that.
Yeah.
And somebody like a Glenn Beck, or I think even a Howard Stern, if what they're interested in is purely making money, I think that model works for them. For 99% of other podcasters, that's not going to work. But when you find an interesting personality like a Howard Stern, I think people will pay to listen to and watch Howard Stern if that's the only way they can get him.
Leo, if I were Howard Stern, I would do an exclusive deal with Stitcher.
Howard.
What Norm is saying about Glenn Beck being, he's the most entrepreneurial personality that comes from terrestrial radio and is really embracing the new medium.
Right.
And a lot of folks could not, aren't large enough to be able to do that and have the following, but that's the model for someone the size of Howard Stern. That's the model, or join forces with somebody who's a leader in the space.
Right.
And he was the inflection point between terrestrial radio and satellite radio.
That's
when,
right.
When Howard
That's
right. went over,
that was a big deal.
That was the pivotal moment. And this is the next evolution of radio.
With Stitcher, I left my Sirius subscription lapse. There's nothing Sirius can bring me that I can't get on my phone.
That's right.
I mean, it doesn't. I'd hate to be in their business right now.
I thought it was a failed model
to begin with
from the beginning. Yeah.
Because,
well, you know, it's like that old Bruce Springsteen song. You know, 57 channels and nothing on.
Yeah.
There's so many ways to get music, you know, on demand, you know, through, I mean, you know, Pandora's got, what, a dozen other companies right. that are doing very much the same thing, right. and it's a part of everything.
Google anybody, is, everybody
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you guys
Amazon.
Are doing, you guys have music, access to music.
Some, but yeah. very, very Mostly. Focused on...
Are you going to stay with words. Talk?
Yeah, we're laser-focused on that. Want yeah. to continue to be the best at that. Yeah.
Doesn't want to eat the rights fees.
Yeah, there is that. Right. I mean, we work more hand-in-hand with content partners.
It's pretty clear that nothing's killed anything else. There's many models for paying for it, many models for building. I mean, you could have a paywall, you could be
sure.
subscription... But you could also be advertising based. I mean, there's all sorts of ways to do this.
Well, look
there's
at
crowdfunding now too.
Look at Corolla. He uses everything. He's crowd.
He sells cheap wine. He
have you ever had Mangria?
Yeah, it's terrible.
But he's selling, you know, a couple of hundred thousand cases of that.
Yeah.
I think Norm, aren't you selling it for him?
No, that was before our deal. We do now represent him for advertising exclusively. We had to prove ourselves to do that, and we had to own Dr. Drew, you know, to make that work
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, Drew said, okay, they're cool.
You know, but...
So all of Adam Carolla's representation is through you now
for ad sales. Yeah.
Interesting. Do you help him with distribution, production, anything else?
We don't really need to. I mean, he's on our platform, you know, but, you know, Adam, for us, in many ways, you know, is we don't make a lot of money off of the tremendous amount of volume, but what it was important for us to do was to have him.
Right.
And, you know, because
he's a brand.
He is a great brand. And then when we put him together with other great brands, right, you know, that were already out there, and now we're producing programs ourselves that, is this wood?
I definitely not.
Styrofoam, maybe. Yeah. You know, we want to build a platform of quality programming that people can go to kind of short circuit the process of looking around.
Actually, I've been remiss. I should let both of you guys talk about your what you do. So tell me about Podcast One.
Well, it's very simple. I mean, the story of West, calling it Podcast One was not by accident, because it was an easy story to tell in a variety of areas, least of all consumers, really. The story of Westwood One to Podcast One, because at my advanced age, I didn't really need to do a podcasting venture, but I just couldn't understand why nobody was really doing it in the way that we're doing it. And so I decided to do it. And, I was introduced to a young guy named Kit Gray, who'd been out there representing some podcasts and selling them to advertisers. And, you know, had done a nice job with it. And, we were introduced by a mutual friend. And I thought, geez, this kid reminds me of me when I started Westwood One. And the radio syndication business was very much like where podcasting is right now. No national advertisers bought syndicated radio,
really,
30 years ago. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe some direct response advertisers. So I just thought, you know, the opportunity was very similar to what it was that I did, you know, when we sort of kick-started syndicated radio in terms of developing demand from national advertisers. And, this was less expensive to do. Even though Westwood One, I didn't have any money when I started Westwood One. You know, I had $10,000 and a working wife. You know, today I have more than $10,000, and I no longer have that wife. And, of course,
she's not working.
yeah.
So what does Podcast One provide to a podcaster? First of all, how many podcasts do you have?
About 200.
Okay. And you choose them? Do they come to you? How does that work?
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of people come to us. We would like to keep the list fairly small so that it's a place where a lot of people who already have a strong social following can come and find, you know, make it simple. But what Podcast One and Westwood One did, it's a revenue solution to generate. We're trying to, and so far so good, build demand with national advertisers, Madison Avenue advertisers, Fortune 500 advertisers, the same kind of advertisers that you would see on network television or radio or local television, local radio, in order to turn the medium into a medium, you know, that could become, you know, at least a few hundred million and maybe, you know, a $1 billion business. When we started in syndication, very small business. Now network radio and syndication is $1.5 billion business.
Right. What does it take to get those advertisers? What are they looking for?
Well, first of all, I think they're looking for comfort. We have a relationship that goes back 30 years, I think.
Right.
They
don't know the podcast. Who's this guy? I don't, you know.
Well, with all due respect to all of the creative people who are sitting in this room right now, you guys are the product, you know? I mean, you guys are the creative energy, primarily. I mean, if I asked for a show of hands, I think I'd see a very, very large group of people who are producing their own podcast sitting in this audience.
Right.
But, you know, There needs to be kind of an organized industry in order to get serious national advertisers to take a look at us in the way that I think we should be looked at if we want to create, you know, a demand that advertisers feel comfortable with. So, you know, you've got to have the kind of reporting that they expect. You've got to have the kind of billing that they expect. You've got to have the kind of production values that they expect. You got to have all the things that they expect. And normally, that would be paid for by an industry, but since there really isn't an industry, I'm sort of paying for it myself.
And it's the model for them is radio. They see podcasts as just another form of radio?
Well, I think they see it, and the way we present it is we present it as digital audio on demand.
Okay.
Okay? And which allows us to go to traditional radio buyers. Remember, traditional radio buyers are still spending $16, $17 billion a year. The digital buyers they're spending half that much.
Right.
And the digital buyers are so granular that it makes it hard for us to get a decent rate when they start drilling down and saying, you know, we want young mothers, you know, with a certain birth defect and only one leg.
Right.
You know, you know, it's hard to charge a decent CPM for those kinds of things.
Right. So, Noah, what was the plan when you founded Stitcher? What have you done since?
Well, by background, I guess I'm an internet entrepreneur. I was on the founding management team of StubHub, the ticket company, and I started to get really interested in audio just personally.
Right.
I started a podcast, hired a comedian, started a podcast just for fun. It was basically like America's funniest home video, but for audio. People
That's
would
awesome.
Like send in funny clips and listeners would vote on the best clips, and then and we'd make a show out of it. And I realized that there was already all this great content out there in podcast form, from large radio to long tail shows about everything under the sun. But it was very difficult to deliver the content. And it was very difficult to find the content that you wanted. I remember being on the phone with my mom late one night and trying to explain to her how she could listen to my radio
show.
Yeah,
it's too hard. Yeah.
And it was impossible. You have downloading it and syncing so I was an early adopter of Pandora. I saw with a two-way internet connection how much better an experience can be, a listening experience can be, and how much more personalized it can be. I was also inspired by the number of people that actually went to the lengths that they did to listen to podcasts back in the iPod days. It was a clear signal to me of how important personalization actually is to people.
Right.
So a lot of it was a bet on the timing of the mobile internet. And a bet on the timing of the automotive industry embracing a connected car.
You saw your future is in car, pretty much.
50% of radio listening is in car.
Is in car.
And the morning commute is all talk.
Right.
We knew that was necessary for us. So we set about to create an on-demand internet radio company that focused on spoken word, news, talk, and information. And what we believed to be the most important things was easy delivery of content, so a listener can just press a button and start to listen, and it learns from you. And then the second part is recommending shows that you may also like.
Right.
So expanding the universe. We have 20,000 podcasts on Stitcher right now, so finding the ones that you want is not trivial, and then finally, so we're most popular as an app now, 12 million downloads, we're the largest distribution platform of podcasts on Android, and second largest on the iPhone behind iTunes.
iTunes, yeah.
But the car has been has been the long-term goal. So we were the first ones to announce alongside Pandora with Ford at the Consumer Electronics Show a few years ago, and basically the dam broke. All automotive companies realized that this was this was the future, and that people wanted they wanted in the car what they were already listening to that was in their pocket through a mobile device, and having an internet connection in your pocket on the go was one of the keys to that. So fast forward to where we are now. In 2013 there were 150 million plus podcasts downloaded on Stitcher. There will be over 4 million Stitcher enabled vehicles in 2014,
And how do you make your money?
It's an advertising model, so similar to Pandora or to terrestrial radio, but we're able to deliver a lot more value, especially as we get bigger, in terms of things like frequency capping, which terrestrial radio listeners are not used to, and it becomes less invasive. Better targeting, better analytics. We still, as an industry, need to figure out what that measurement is, and have a standard measurement. But it's an advertising-based model.
It does seem like one of the things to be mature industry podcasting needs is metrics.
Yep.
Both of you have mentioned that.
Yep.
Now, radio has Arbitron, TV has Nielsen. What is podcasting at?
Well, now everybody has Nielsen. There is no more Arbitron.
That's right.
You know, everybody has Nielsen.
They'll have people meters.
Yeah. You know, there's a variety of different companies that measure podcasts. You know, the ones that you're probably the most familiar with, you know, are Libsyn, who's been around a long time and does a good job. Then there's Raw Voice with their Blueberry application. PodTrack. There's a lot of different ones, but all of the technology is proprietary.
Yeah, we use PodTrack numbers, and you told me we shouldn't because it's too low.
I didn't. Yeah. All I said was, you know, that's mostly, from what I understand, a measurement of uniques.
Right.
You know, and
what we found is, though, ultimately, what it comes down to is a value proposition for an advertiser. Numbers are meaningless. As long as the advertiser is getting the results they want, the return on their investment.
Well, yeah, with a Madison Avenue advertisers, they don't know the return on investment.
They can't tell.
Within, you know, a multi-million dollar ad campaign.
Pepsi isn't going
to
know.
So they need to be comfortable that the numbers are going to be right.
Right.
You know, Noah was talking about building the platform. You know, we're a little bit different, and that's where measurement is very important to us. We don't care how many different platforms our programs are available on. You know, at some point, we'll start focusing on building out the Podcast One platform so that it's the place that people go. But right now, that's not what we're focused on.
Well, and the beauty of podcasting is you can get it in a variety of different ways.
Sure, as long as you can count the downloads. I mean,
well, that's
right
what
now,
makes it hard, though.
That's right.
Well, but if you take a look at the downloads that we're generating monthly right now, on the 200 podcasts, it's in excess of 100 million downloads.
Right.
So monthly. Now the question is, what is a download really? But everybody measures differently. I mean, if you go to SoundCloud, they don't measure downloads per se. They measure something else. And then if you go to a variety of different mediums, they measure in different. Ways, but what you have to remember is all of these measurements are estimates, okay? Whether it's Nielsen or it was Arbitron before it, whether it's traditional radio, whether it's traditional television, network television, there, and also a lot of the digital. I mean, it's as credible as the company that is putting out the numbers. You know, if Google puts out a number, people believe it, you know. If Joe Schmo puts out a number, you know, a buyer's going to want to see, you know, more stuff to back it up. But the one thing that we know, that all three of us know, is that direct response advertisers love podcasting. And they love podcasting because it generates leads and acquisition for their products. They can measure the effectiveness of a single announcement, of a single spot in all of the programs that they purchase. And that message, along with metrics that give comfort to advertising agencies, has to be the nature of the presentation that you take forward to the big advertisers to say you're crazy not to do this.
Is it ever going to coalesce, though, into a single system that everybody knows and trusts as it is in television and radio?
Yeah, as long as people understand that they're audience estimates.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're working on that right now. We're working on that with Edison Research. You know, I worked with that back when I was in the U.S. Broadcasting Board of Governors. I was appointed by President Clinton, then reappointed by Bush. So I must have been doing something right, because those two guys don't usually agree on a lot of things. But when I was doing broadcasting in the Middle East, setting up Middle East broadcasting in Arabic, of all things, you know, I brought Edison Research in and Nielsen to do market research in all, you know, 22 countries of the Middle East. And they were able to put together credible ratings information there. You know, if we can do it in 22 countries of the Middle East in Arabic, we ought to be able to figure out how to do it here.
What is the response of advertisers today to podcasts? Noah, what kind, when you go out and pitch Stitcher, what kind of response are you getting?
We are so we pitch it. We go in a different door than Podcast One. We go in the digital door right now, and so we are we're mobile. And advertisers are looking for things that are safe and mobile because this is the, you know, we're still in sort of the wild frontier from a mobile perspective. And we're internet radio, so we're competing with the Pandoras of the world. They are very enthusiastic about the fact that, one, it's Stitcher's brand safe. And aligned with really strong brands, and two, that there are things you can do on the spoken word side in terms of audience targeting based on what we know the listener is listening to, based on what their interests are.
So you actually are tuning what ads are being played.
Yes,
depending on what the listeners
we can. I mean, we need we're nowhere near Pandora's size. So the more size we have, obviously, the more that we can target. But that's resonating with them. And then the third thing, as we all know, and as terrestrial radio knows, is relative to music, spoken word is a much more lean forward experience. The listener is not only heavily engaged in what they're listening to; they're generally doing, you know, they're doing something else, and their mind is totally free to listen. It's not like music; it's sort of playing in the background. They also connect deeply with the hosts, and the more long tail the content, the more they connect with the hosts. And one of the reasons that the DR side has been so effective so far is because a host that you love, that you follow, that maybe many people don't know about, if they're asking you to buy a certain thing, you're probably going to do it.
Right.
So that
DR is direct response.
DR is direct response.
So that's where they say call this number right now and order today, and they can measure the effectiveness of the ad directly.
That's right, but we are focused more on
as
brand.
Opposed to drink more Pepsi because you're hip and with it, which you can't measure.
Right.
So spoken word hosts works well with this direct response.
It works well with direct response. We are focused more on brand because there's a lot more. DR is the first step in the opportunity, and there's a huge amount of brand opportunity.
Ultimately,
out there.
Brand is where the growth is going to happen.
That's right.
Typical in a new medium. You start with direct response, but you move to brand as you become more established. People trust you more. And you said digital. What's the difference between digital and a traditional media buy? You're working with a different part of the ad agency?
Yeah, we're going into we're going in for the same dollars that's buying
banner ads,
internet radio. Okay. They're buying mobile. They're not the ones buying radio.
Right.
See, we've made a conscious decision to go with the traditional buyers.
Why is that?
Because we think we offer them a value proposition. There's competition within the agencies themselves and at the client level between traditional media buying and digital media buying. And we think that we offer traditional media buyers a digital solution that gives them something to be able to compete effectively with within their own operations. It's sort of like the first people who became interested in what I was doing were talent agents. You know,
why?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, I've been sitting courtside at Laker games for the last 30 years. There's 8 seats between the Laker bench and the scores table. 4 of them are mine, and 4 of them belong to the William Morris Endeavor Agency. So Ari Emanuel, sits next to me, and I was telling him what I was getting ready to do, and he said, you know, that sounds really interesting. Why don't I put a meeting together? I'll get my guys together, my team.
Why would established big stars be interested in
because stuff? Everybody's looking, the agencies are looking for digital solutions for their client base. You know, their client base has gone way beyond just movie stars and TV stars. We're getting their YouTube stars coming in. We're talking to them. We're getting, you know, people.
Are they hedging their bets because they think this is the, you know, they're worried this is the future? Or, I mean.
You got to be there.
The younger
the clients that they have, the more personally involved. You know, in online and in...
It seems that everybody's trying to figure this out. What's going on?
Absolutely. And this is a simple solution to take somebody. And plus, you know, you take a look and you think, why is it that, you know, when you take a look at iTunes, you know, at the measurements that the rankers and what have you, that comedians do so well.
Right.
Well, they were sort of forced into it. I mean, there aren't very many comedians that are working today that haven't been screwed by a club owner at one time or another. And so, you know, they got into it not so much to make money. They got into it initially to promote their club dates, merchandising, all kinds of things. Then all of a sudden...
It was part of their marketing endeavor. Exactly. Now it's a revenue source.
Now it's a revenue source. And you know...
In fact, Mark Maron, who's a very successful podcaster, really has made a career... Now as a TV show based on podcasting.
Absolutely. And you're going to see more and more of that. You know, one of the things that we're thinking about doing is we're thinking about opening up what we do to a larger group of podcasts, maybe not the ones that are currently delivering big download numbers, but, you know, maybe call it the Podcast One Underground and make it available so that people can come in and sort of sample what's out there and see if it builds organically so that it can move up to the main platform and be saleable to national advertisers.
At its peak, how many shows did Westwood One have?
Oh, God.
Not 200.
No, well, when you consider the fact that Westwood One was the Mutual Broadcasting System, the CBS Radio Network.
Well, maybe you did
NBC
have.
Radio Network.
Maybe you did have 200.
We had 3,000 employees. Yeah. I mean, you know, we...
So this is very much like Westwood One with a different delivery system.
And it's like the Westwood One programming side of the business in its early stages. And the numbers, even the revenue numbers, are almost spot on for the first 3 years of what Westwood One was.
Now, I think a lot of people here probably, I don't know, I've been in the Podcast Expo since the very first one, and it wasn't about money in the first one, it wasn't about money in the second one, it started becoming a little more about money in the third one. I'd hate to think that podcasting has suddenly become about how can we monetize, how can we make money at this.
You know, a guy said to me one time, a guy that I respect who's in the, who's a lawyer, he says, you know something, Pattis? He was a New York lawyer. He says, you know something, Pattis? When they say it's not about the money, it's about the money. Now, look, I mean, I've worked with talent for 30 years, and I know that there are certainly people, you know, especially in the music business when we started out, okay? A lot of people in the music business, especially back in the old album rock days, you know, they weren't going to sell out. They weren't going to do this. They did it because of the love. But just as soon as they get exposed to money, it's amazing what a change takes place in their life. You know, that's the reason why we want to hook ourselves up with creative people who are interested in the product and let them be interested in the product and let us worry about the other stuff.
There you go. Because I think that's why people like me are attracted to podcasting. It's the freedom, the creativity, the chance to do something different and unique. And, yeah, I guess if you can make some money while you're doing that,
well,
it's not such a bad thing.
Well, it turned out to be a good business, didn't it?
It's not such a bad business.
but it develops out of passion.
But it has to start with the passion. It
starts with passion, but after so much time, you need to eat. So,
right.
And it could stay a hobby or, as we're seeing, this is an industry transformation.
But it does feel like there is a growing gulf between the hobby podcasters, of which there are thousands, hundreds of thousands, we know from iTunes, and then people who have decided this is going to be a career, a business, and those are it's a much smaller number.
Yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't eliminate the hobby podcaster from the marketplace. As a matter of fact, I think it gives the hobby podcaster a possibility that maybe what they're doing could catch on.
I mean,
when you take a look at the viral nature of the business,
you
nobody can really predict what right. people are going to go out and find interesting.
You never know.
And that's the great thing about and why we put so much emphasis on the recommendation engine and on the rankings is that
discovery is so important.
Discovery, and it gives shows the opportunity to actually be found and for them to thrive on their own merit.
Do you think a good show will be discovered?
Absolutely. If we're doing our job, a good show will be delivered, will be discovered.
And that happens kind of in a snowball effect. Gradually you accumulate listeners and more listeners. They tell other listeners. Is that how it...
There's that, and then there's mechanisms for Stitcher anyway. There are mechanisms within the platform. You like this, so you might like that. We also have fastest trending shows,
right.
And so if a show catches on, we help it to gather momentum.
Do you find, Norm, with advertisers that there are some shows, even if there is an audience for that show, that they won't touch?
Absolutely.
Sure.
You know, if there's a little E next to it. On Apple, in iTunes.
Explicit.
There's a lot of advertisers who don't want to be in explicit programming. An interesting case. One of our most successful, because what we're doing is we're producing more and more of our own podcasts. That's an economic reality. We have to be able to produce more and more of our podcasts as opposed to represent other podcasts because we can make more money if we own the podcast as well. And with the money that we're having to spend to...
Are you looking for talent? Are you going out and...
Yeah, of course.
Developing
always.
Talent?
Always,
really?
Always.
Interesting.
You know, we launched Stone Cold Steve Austin, mm-hmm. okay? Because I thought that the wrestling space had a group of rabid fans.
That's what you're looking for?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we went
engaged,
out.
Yeah, you know,
we
yeah.
launched him, and immediately, hundreds of thousands of downloads. He's cracked a million, a few times. NPR kind of numbers.
Yeah.
But when he
not
does,
NPR kind of program, but
no. But we make sure we have enough NPR. Programs that we represent, even though it's non-exclusively.
Well, in a way, that's what you're offering in advertisers, and you too, with Stitcher, is kind of a safe place to be. It's why YouTube is difficult, because
right.
you don't know what
yeah.
you're going to be on.
That's right.
Right?
Well, they're not going to get hurt on our platform. If a particular show starts to under-deliver, I got 199 other shows that can make up that audience.
Right.
So in the case of Austin, as I was saying, and the little E... every other word in Steve's show was motherfucker,
Now we have to put an E on this.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now this show can't be on Stitcher. That
yeah.
yeah.
Do you not have explicit content?
We do.
I got a lot of shows that can't be on Stitcher.
we do have explicit content, but we have a way to filter it out.
Yeah. Well, we have a creative way to filter it out. What we did is we had a conversation with Steve, who was an extremely bright guy. And I said, look, I know you can work clean. You did it in wrestling for
right.
for 20 years.
Right.
So why don't we do this? Why don't we do a clean version of your show once a week? And why don't we do Unleashed once a week?
Ah.
So he gets on the air and he talks to his audience. And he says, hey, look, I'm out there and I want to talk to the working man. I want to talk to families. And I don't want you to have to run your kids out of the room.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So we're going to do a family-friendly version of this show so you can keep listening to Steve Austin. But all of you other guys who want to listen to it in your man cave and get a little crazy, on Thursdays we're going to do Steve Austin Unleashed.
That's smart.
And, so now we can sell the E-rated version and
right.
the family-friendly version.
Those and probably people want the E-rated version.
Absolutely. And they're
yeah.
both doing really, really, yeah. really well.
Yeah. So it's interesting that do you have a separate channel for explicit, Noah, or...
No, it's by, because for instance, in
is
the comedy...
Is it the same concern that people will be listening and hear an expletive and... Their kids will get upset, or
yeah. I mean, there's that concern in any media.
Uh-huh.
We
just know that a lot of podcasters did it so that they could say those words.
That's right. And even
there's
Howard
no
Stern
FCC.
On satellite radio, Howard Stern
same
went
thing.
There. For the, well, yeah, and the and the $500 million paycheck.
But yeah, that helps.
So we by show, we basically classify it as right. explicit or non-explicit.
And do you notice in listening patterns that there's a difference? I mean, do explicit shows not do as well?
No, some of them do great. I mean, the whole comedy genre. Around, yeah. I mean,
comedy is often explicit. A lot of these.
Mark Maron's show is called What the Fuck.
Right.
Yeah. So,
well,
and
WTF,
it does really,
right.
yeah, yeah, WTF.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
we know what it means.
We know what the F.
Yeah.
We know what the F stands
yeah,
for.
Yeah.
So those shows do great. There's only a certain subset of advertisers that are going to be interested in that.
Right.
And you should try an explicit show and see how your numbers skyrocket.
It's interesting because we decided to make it family friendly because I didn't want people not to be able to have their kids listen. I wanted people, and because we're covering technology, I thought people would want maybe their kids to listen to a technology show. But it's hard, you know, we're live now all the time, not to, the fleeting expletive is.
Yeah, but Leo Unleashed? You don't think there's a market for Leo Unleashed?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Really? Late night. I always wanted to do a late night show.
Can we get an exclusive on that?
Yeah, you got it.
Hey, it was my idea.
So, neither of you do video, right?
Well, we do a little bit of video to augment what we do, but we're primarily audio.
And Stitcher's audio.
We don't do video at all. We think that the listening paradigm is fundamentally different, and we're focused on the audio experience.
So did I. And the reason we started doing video is because video gets a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And then the other reason we started doing it is because we wanted people to be able to, it's a different model, to tune in and watch live at any time.
Yeah, but since the primary method, I mean, you know, 70% of our, we've done this across our platform, 70% of our consumption is mobile.
Yeah.
And it's because of this.
Yeah.
So, right. And this is audio. This isn't.
It's in the car, right?
Well,
yeah.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I drive between Santa Barbara and L.A. twice a week, and all I'm doing is listening to podcasts. And it's so easy that, you know, I mean, look, I believe that the in-dash solution and deals with car companies are very important. But, you know, this, is, like I said, 70% of our audience consume this.
You don't, you're on Stitcher, right? I mean, your stuff's on Stitcher, right?
Yeah, some of our stuff, I think, is on Stitcher.
Yeah.
There's no reason why I wouldn't.
No, we want our stuff everywhere.
That's the beauty of podcasting.
Just as long as we're the only ones who can sell the inventory.
Right.
I don't care. I don't care where it is. And that's not exclusive. I mean, I'm not the exclusive rep for the NPR shows. But we like to have them there because it's a good place for them to be. But most of the shows that we represent, we're the exclusive advertising sales representative. And, of course, on all of our owned and operateds, we are. Because we want to be able to walk into an advertiser and say, here it is, you know, and most of this stuff you can only buy through us.
Is all your stuff CPM cost per thousand? Is that how you bill people, or is?
Yeah, you know, it usually has something to do with the rate structure. You know,
it's loosely based.
Well,
on the number of impressions.
It depends whether they want you to, you know, show them uniques, whether they want you to show them, you know.
So it sounds like you deal a lot.
Absolutely.
You go in and you say, there's no structure here. What do you want?
Well, we don't exactly go in and
say
there's
no
structure. Yeah, sure, we have a rate card.
But work off the rate card a lot.
It's a negotiation. I mean, when you go in to sit down, I've been doing this for 30 years. When you go in and sit down with a media buyer, that media buyer's job is to pay as little for it as they can.
And your job is to make
them
pay as
much. And our job is to, you know, get as much as we can for our, you know, most of our deals are partnerships with our producers. Yeah. They're equity owners. They own the program.
Right.
You know, and we're involved as long as we produce.
Right.
You know, produce revenues.
How do you do it, Noah? CPM?
CPM, but what we're able to do so many unique things that we can get away from. I mean, they're same thing, loose CPM, but we're able to get away from it by doing things like doing things that you can do interactively.
Value add.
Who do you think is going to be MVP of the Super Bowl, sponsored by, and you can vote right on the phone?
Oh,
and these are things you can do. That you can never do before.
Yeah.
And those things are cool, and it's a huge part of what we need to do. And I mean, you are so unique in what you do. I mean, you're kind of a 360 sort of package in your own space. You deal with all of the sponsor needs. That's fine, but it will only take the business so far. If the business wants to become a billion-dollar business so that podcasting can offer tremendous opportunities for everybody who's sitting in this room, whether they just want to do it as a hobby or whether they want to do it as a living, then it's got to be a much bigger business. And you got to start doing business with people who may not be interested in building the brand through the personal association with the podcast. They just want to meet, they just want to be out there and cover every base and cover all of the people. And we have to show them that our consumers are worth being part of that mix. In fact, they may be the most important part of that overall mix.
Seems to me that as they look at their mainstream advertising dollars and try to figure out what the efficiency is of it, and then they compare it with the efficiency of podcast advertising, that that's in podcast's favor, is it not?
Absolutely.
It has to be.
And the kind of interactivity you can offer, Noah, cannot be offered in one way traditional media, radio or TV.
That's right.
So those things are unique. It's a unique proposition.
Absolutely.
And ultimately, does it mean that podcasting can take a lot of that advertising dollar away from mainstream media?
Well, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think that podcasting was going to grow while traditional media was going to do no better than remain flat to maybe, you know, arc downward.
And you think I'm crazy to do video?
No, I don't think you're crazy to do video. I don't think you're crazy to do anything. I mean, look at you. You're doing great. You know, that ain't crazy to me. I mean,
it's expensive. it's complicated.
The video. I mean, we stream Loveline. Loveline is on the radio every night from 10 to midnight. We're now podcasting Loveline, and we stream Loveline live every night. You know,
there's something about live I really like. Stitcher. You don't have a live component.
We've
have you looked at
moved
that?
Away from we've dabbled in it a bit, but we have really wanted to be focused on the best, on being the best in
on demand.
Yeah. and audio and yeah. and spoken word.
Yeah.
And
see, here's what you can't do live. You can't pause.
That's right.
You know, we're radio with a pause button.
Yeah.
Or and
a start when you want button.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And a consume it when you want button. There are certain things that we will never be able to do that have to be done live. News, sports, things that require live interaction. But you can still have your interaction with your audience by simply letting them know through social media when you're doing the program,
right.
If they want to call in and, or if they want to use social media to communicate.
Even news is very popular on Stitcher, and some of the news providers are putting out news every 10 minutes. And we it's almost live, and if it's everybody wants to know when it is live, everybody wants to know. They have this feeling of safety, that if, God forbid, aliens invaded the planet, they would know immediately.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're able to provide that for them in the form of a breaking news alert. If there's a breaking news alert and they're listening to something else, as soon as the aliens invade the planet, they get the
message.
Can I make a little personal aside here?
Yes.
You're a much better looking man in person than you are in that picture.
That's a terrible picture.
You know? I would do something about that picture.
What about mine?
Actually, I would do something about that picture too.
Yeah, I guess.
You're way better looking. Now,
here's why we do what we do live in video, is I feel like there's a shift in how people consume content from this notion of wanting to hear every word to wanting to have, and I hope it's not background content like music, but to want to kind of dip in and out of it like you would the Today Show, for instance. And so what we're trying to do is produce content that is a river of content that you don't need to pause because there's just always more. And, Twitter's like that. A lot of content that people are getting used to is like that, where it's just I used to try to read every tweet that had happened since I'd been there. You quickly give that up. And you just treat it as a kind of a real-time
85% of our audience on our platform consumes the podcast at the actual time of the download. So basically, they're not downloading it. They're just listening.
They're streaming it,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
You know, so they want it. And that's what happens when you get podcasts that are personality or subject matter centric.
Right.
That are very important to the fans of those people. Yep. That's why we like to start out, because we don't spend any money advertising, because I don't think we have to.
Well, now tell me about that, because what kind of marketing does podcasting need to do? Why don't you have to?
Well, because I got 200 podcasts with a loyal group of followers for each one, which probably represent at least 100 different communities. Okay? So if I'm going to take somebody who has a strong following already, we're going to let their fans know that they're going to have a podcast. Then we're going to be selective about the people that come on as guests and so forth on that podcast, and hopefully they'll have a strong social media
following. So that's how you market it.
As well, yeah. And then we promote it
right
in all of the other podcasts. So it becomes this sort of self-perpetuating promotional machine. But let me just say this. There's a lot of times you put a guest on who has no social following simply because it's the right guest for that program, or you deal with a subject matter simply because it's the right thing creatively to do. You can't get in the way of the creative process, but you can do a few things that we've all learned over the years that will generate audience awareness.
Yeah, we do that too. The people we bring on the shows very often have their own communities, and it's a way of merging two communities.
We put Kathy Lee Gifford on the air because she's on
she
NBC.
She has a podcast?
Yeah. Yeah,
what's Kathy Lee's podcast?
It's Kathy Lee and Company, and she interviews a whole bunch of people. She's interviewed...
How interesting.
Her first show was with Regis Philbin. Her last show was with Kris Jenner.
Now her demographic is definitely not what you traditionally think of as the podcast market. It's housewives. It's older housewives.
We're not worried about what it has been. We're worried about what it's going to be.
That's right. And the wider it gets, the better.